Previously on Solve the World.
I'm Marshall Winston, resident skeptic. You shake Marshall's outstretched hand. It's ridiculously cold, but yet still strong and inviting. You momentarily flinch with bashfulness, realizing your hand is quite warm and clammy. It's common practice to introduce yourself.
Right, yeah. Sorry. I can't believe that little girl just freaked out my phone.
Your name?
Jennifer. Jennifer Firth.
Ah, so it's your first day.
Solve the World. A fictional adventure told in 100 episodes.
Be it what it may, he's made some odd choices of late.
Episode 69, Superheroes. Those who can save must. If mere continuation was the goal, the Constable's 1% scheme was not a threat. Marshall knew this much. For 4 weeks now, he'd watched the dreadful lottery take place. Innocent children sent away on trains. Where to? Who knows? Nowhere good. Marshall was confident of that much. But the weekly purge wasn't really an existential threat. Sure, if the population of orphan children at Onmo were static, a 1% policy would wipe them all out in 100 weeks. The population wasn't static, though. It was growing, week by week. Truth was, boatloads of new arrivals swamped in every Sunday, far more than 1% every week. So then, if Marshall Winston was placed here to make sure everything was maintained, that Onmo continued as usual, then as of right now, there was nothing to worry about. Problem was, children aren't numbers. They're not data points. You can't break them down logically into mere stats. Rune Abdo was the embodiment of this reality. At least, for Marshall. No one else noticed the little Somalian girl. Quite literally, no one. Rune was maybe 5 years old. Maybe. He noticed her immediately in the big auditorium as she entered Onmo for the first time. Marshall didn't share many physical features with Rune. He was not Somalian. But he still couldn't wipe the feeling that if he were ever to have children, a child, one child, she'd somehow look just like this little Rune. She didn't speak a lick of English. There were probably other Somalian-raised children at Onmo, but none in little Rune's batch. None that Marshall could see. For the first few days, Marshall just kept his eyes on her. In the beginning, he didn't know her name, know who she was. He just watched from afar. By Thursday, he worried. As far as he could tell, she didn't eat. She didn't sleep. She just stood. Usually in the center of whatever room she was in. Her face was emotionless. But those eyes. Proportional to her body, she had the biggest eyes Marshall had ever seen. They were brown, but a light brown. So that against the dark shade of her skin, they looked like bright stars, emeralds caught up in a sea of charcoal. Marshall approached her.
Hello, I'm Marshall. What's your name?
Those big eyes.
Marshall placed a hand on his chest.
Marshall.
No response.
Can you say it? Marshall.
Brown emerald discs staring up at him.
Marshall,
he said, falling to his knees. Even down this far, he still stood half a foot taller than her. Ever so slowly, he delicately took her hand in his, placed it over his heart.
Marshall.
Her hand, small in his, he placed it on her heart. His fingers on top of hers resting above her skinny little chest cavity, Marshall could feel the weight of the moment. Her heart was beating out of her chest.
Her face remained non-emotive, but inside, the poor thing was terrified. Marshall smiled meekly and held the pose.
"Rune,"
she managed to whisper.
"Rune?"
Marshall repeated. He took her hand back to his heart.
"Marshall."
"Marshall,"
she replied.
"Good, good."
Marshall smiled broadly now. This small little moment gave him more joy than anything that had transpired in the last, God knows how long. He left her there. As adult of Anmo, Marshall did have actual tasks he needed to perform. He couldn't stay with Rune all day and play patty cake. But he wanted to. He wanted to keep her safe. Help her to smile. That's all. He wanted to see Rune smile. That night, a slow panic swept over Marshall. What was her number? Was it green? Yellow? Did Rune have a red number? The next morning, Marshall was everywhere, searching for Rune. He wouldn't find her until after dinner. It was the evening before the Saturday lottery. If Rune had a low number, a yellow or red, there was almost no time to make it up. No time to find a solution. She was standing in one of the Malandrinian mixing well rooms. Why? Marshall didn't have a clue.
"Rune!"
he yelled out to her. She turned to him. He couldn't help but smile. Those big eyes, my goodness! He grabbed her arm harder than he meant, took a swipe at her number. 157. Green as can be. He sighed. Smiled. Later that evening, Marshall repeated his heart-to-heart connection with Rune. This time, getting a step further. Marshall. Winston. Rune. Abdo. The list of worries the next week were quite different in regards to Rune Abdo. Marshall no longer worried about her number. Chasing higher numbers, working hard, that was for the lower class. The unfortunate orphans who inherited a bottom-tier number. Usually that meant anyone under 50. Perhaps in a particularly competitive group, 75. Rune's number was high enough that she never had to worry about the lottery. What kept Marshall up at night was her diet, and fears of any number of local gangs and bullies. Under the totalitarian eyes of Constable, life at Anmo consisted of an ever-widening panoply of kid gangs and 10-year-old despots, all fighting and scrapping for some sort of center-wide fame. Right now, though, problem numero uno was making sure Rune ate, slept, and maintained her hygiene. Marshall made sure the two started hanging out. He taught her, visually, how to run her little life here at the center. He showed her how to choose food, how to register for a shower, how to pick out a bed. She had a high enough number that she could afford some of the more luxurious amenities Anmo had to offer its child guests. By the end of the week, Rune Abdo followed Marshall. She remained, forever, non-emotive, a statue at all times when it came to her facial responses. But she clearly liked Marshall. Likely as much as he liked her. She followed him as he went about performing his adult tasks, every day. The two were quickly becoming inseparable, each adopting each other as resident father and daughter. This peaceful, quite wonderful little relationship went completely unnoticed by the powers that be at Anmo. Constable seemed not privy to the familial attachment Rune and Marshall felt for one another. Unfortunately, gang leader Killjoy was privy. Killjoy and his hoodlums found Rune one Friday night. Her device was impaled on a sharpened fork's edge. The next morning, the lottery took place. Marshall couldn't believe his ears when he heard Rune's name announced.
Out there.
Red. Unless something changed in the next 6 hours, his newfound daughter was getting booted from Anmo. Off on a train headed to nowhere. Jen's not dead. Duh. Atticus was carried down into the submarine on a gurney. Quickly thereafter, they were well on their way. Jennifer Dash, came to Atticus's bedside. Hello, Atticus. Are you real? This time, yeah. I watched you die. You thought you did. I did. I was in the glass house. You were a level above. You closed your eyes, slumped over. I didn't die. You hurt yourself. I fell. How? I wanted to do something good. There's this guy. I wanted to save him, make sure he didn't have to go into the glass house. I climbed a building. I was caught. I fell. Oh, I'm sorry. It's okay. Maybe it's better, you know? The pain helps me. I don't have to think about all the bad stuff. Even right now, you know, I know I should be tripping out right now, right? Here you are, Jennifer friggin' Dash. Alive, well, at my bedside. That should be a big deal. But I don't feel anything. Nothing special. So, I think, you know, pain helps me. It's leveling me out, maybe. That sentiment hurt Jen's feelings a little. She tried not to show it. You get some rest, okay? We'll talk later. Kind of tired of resting, Atticus said, but he was gone by the time he uttered the words. Hey, you need to eat this. Atticus opened his eyes to see a spoonful of Jell-O being pressed into his mouth. The Jell-O presser was a fellow smuggly, surely one of the security task force dudes sequestered to follow Atticus everywhere. Begrudgingly, Atticus opened his mouth. You gotta understand how these things work.
What things?
Atticus said with a mouthful of green jelly.
Everyone wants Jen, okay? The whole world's been watching her. Free Church has her. Everyone else wants her. And we need her to find the Croatoan force, okay? That's what we need. But as long as everyone's looking for her, trying to get their claws on her, there's no way we could take her anywhere. Too costly. Too dangerous.
Another spoonful plunked into Atticus's mouth.
So, you know, the timing just worked out nicely, I think. The elders, we can really trust them. They know what they're doing, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Atticus nodded. He wasn't sure why.
Coming up with this plan, the whole glass house thing, it's just came together nicely, so nicely.
But I saw Jen die, Atticus eked out before the next Jell-O airplane docked in his mouth.
Everyone did. There was drones flying all around, zooming in on her and everything. Perfect. Like something out of Ocean's 11.
Zoom, came the next mouthful.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Atticus nodded again.
What was she like, you know, like before?
Before? Atticus managed to say.
Yeah, like, you two knew each other before, you know, everything went on. What was she like?
I don't know. Nice?
Yeah, but like, was she normal? Did other people look at her and be like, oh, hey, there goes Jen. You know what I mean?
Not really.
I guess I'm just asking you advice, man to man. Think I got a shot with her?
Atticus stared blankly at the spoon feeder.
I'm thinking, the dude added. I'm thinking like, you know, she's stuck in this little submarine. There's only like 6 of us down here. Captain's old, 2 of the other guys married. You're, well, you know.
The guard motioned to Atticus's bed.
So like, the chances seem pretty good. You know, for a guy like me.
No response.
So what do you think?
About what?
Atticus said dumbly. You think I got a shot or not?
The dude lifted his arms and spun 360 degrees, showing himself off to Atticus, saying with his body, essentially, shouldn't a fella as good-looking and ripped as I am be able to get with her?
Sure, why not? Atticus mumbled. Thanks, man. That means a lot coming from you. I'll do my best.
This security guard, who Atticus never caught the name of, patted Atticus on the shoulder with an expression of astounding thanks slapped upon his face. He acted like Atticus just gave him his blessing to marry his daughter. Was that what this was? Why was he seeking Atticus's approval anyway? That was as far as Atticus's internal inquiry got before falling back asleep. A wonderful respite from reality. Marshall had the pipsqueak by the throat.
If you don't, choose Rune Abdo. For mercy, I'll see to it that you're dead by the end of the day.
Marshall had this kin pinned against a hot steel boiler somewhere in the back bowels of Onmo.
And it won't be a quick death, just in case you're the type of lizard breath that likes that sort of thing. No, I'll make it slow.
Marshall released his grip. The boy lurched forward, falling on his knees, gasping for breath.
Let me hear you say it. Who are you going to choose today?
The girl!
Marshall kicked him squarely in the stomach.
What girl? Say her name.
The kid began to cry out as he said,
Rune! Rune!
Marshall cocked his fist back, grabbed the kid's shirt. He was a skinny little guy. One punch in the nose from grown-up Marshall Winston, and this kid might never get up again. He had to be careful here. Can't let your blood boil over. At the same time, this was life or death for Rune. This little squirt had the keys to the kingdom.
Say her full name.
I don't remember.
The kid shielded his face with both hands.
Abdo. Rune Abdo.
Rune Abdo. Rune Abdo.
The kid repeated.
Good. I scram before I change my mind.
The kid didn't hesitate to get the HE double hockey sticks out of there.
And remember what happens to you tonight if you suddenly change your mind!
Marshall roared to the fleeing little pig. The backroom deal would prove to be a success. The little tyke chose Rune Abdo that evening for salvation. Onmo's 1% lottery worked to Marshall and Rune's favor today. Every week, the lowest two numbers, the reds, were chosen to take the train out of Onmo. One yellow was also raffled off to join them. But the kid who had the highest number that week, the blue, chose one of the three death row inmates to show mercy upon. One of the three got to stay. Marshall's strong-arming saved Rune on this day. But that was just today. That was this week. Before next week's end, Marshall would have to make sure Rune didn't have to come so close to tasting Onmo's variety of justice. It was gonna be hard work. Eyes open. Atticus lies under the covers in his hospital-style bed in what appears to everyone else to be the biggest room aboard the submarine. In Atticus's lap, a shoebox positioned on the left side. On the right side of his bed, just beside his hand, a bowl filled to the brim of what looks like black Play-Doh. Jennifer stands beside the bed.
What's this?
Atticus says groggily. It's a little experiment.
What sort of experiment?
I wanted to recreate for you something that I went through. Something that really helped me.
Are you gonna make me eat the Play-Doh?
No, and it's not Play-Doh. But it should be edible. It's mostly vanilla pudding with black food coloring.
Mostly?
Yeah, the consistency wasn't quite what I wanted, so I added some brown sugar crystals. And some whole wheat flour.
Flour?
It's not important.
And what's with the shoebox?
Right, okay, here goes. I want you to imagine that the shoebox is your heart.
A shoebox-shaped heart?
Oh, wait. No. Sorry. I got confused. Flip it.
Flip it? Flip what?
The shoebox is, I guess, a shoebox. I always confuse my shoeboxes with my heart.
Common mistake.
No, silly. The bowl of pudding is your heart.
Oh, now it makes much more sense.
It will in just a sec, once you do it.
Do what exactly?
Atticus, can you reach the shoebox and the pudding? Atticus sat up as Jen smashed a couple pillows behind his back, propping him up.
Good to go, Captain,
Atticus says and gives Jen a ceremonial salute and smirk. Okay, so I want you to imagine, like I said, that this bowl is your heart.
You saying I got a black heart?
No, but what if this black stuff is the stuff that's gumming you up, keeping you from being free?
What if?
Atticus said a little sarcastically. You've been through some stuff. I think unless we find a way to shuck off all the grime and dirt of life, it'll start morphing us, changing us. When I talked to you at the psych ward, you acted like a different person. The Atticus I met way back when, the one who wasn't bothered by a broke girl bleeding all over his convenience store, that one wouldn't have acted like you did. He wouldn't go all crazy and have a death wish. He wouldn't leave his sister's side. Something's happened to you, Atticus.
That's not fair.
No, see, you think I'm judging you. I'm not. Atticus, it's okay. You're okay. You're a good guy. I know that. But you have this mud blinding you right now. I think you're too busy condemning yourself to really be yourself. Know what I mean?
Atticus lied.
No. Well, would you just try this out for me?
Sure.
Good. Thanks. Okay. I want you to take your hands, dip it into the bowl, and put every cruddy drop of this gross stuff into the shoebox.
Okay.
I want you to clear your heart out.
That's it?
That's it. Except this. Jen pressed one hand on Atticus's forehead. It was steamy.
Does he have a fever?
While you do it, I want you to think about all the things you're sorry for. And be specific. Every scoop should represent one specific thought. One thing. She took her hand off Atticus. Okay. Go. And he began. Joseph Further. Father. Daddy. Scout. Onmo. Betty. Atticus didn't like this. After three hand scoops, he took the bowl and poured its contents out into the shoebox. It was a big box, so the black pudding paste covered just the bottom of it. There. Done. Atticus said with a conceited smirk. Okay, that's not exactly how I planned it, but okay, to each his own. Now clean out the bowl. I want it spick and span. This, naturally, took more work. Atticus had to use one finger at a time, like a steamroller, to scrub out every millimeter of black gunk. After 2 minutes or so, and let's be honest, more than one licking of puddinged fingers, the bowl was clean.
There. Clean heart.
Well, that's one room of your heart. Jen took the bowl out of Atticus's hands. Here. Second room. From under the bed, Jen pulled a new, full-to-the-brim bowl of black pudding.
Again?
Atticus said with a tinge of hopelessness. Again. He sunk his hands in. This time, no pouring. He went handful by handful. His thoughts meandered from just those things he felt guilty about. He thought of his mother. She'd been gone for so long. Maybe, if she didn't die. Maybe if she could have been there. She would have known what to do. She would have known what to do. She would have kept the family knit together. A clean bowl. Another replacement. Third bowl's the charm, he thought to himself. Atticus thought of his father, more and more with every scoop. My goodness, he was a single parent. Couldn't he have taken a job that didn't take him across the country every other week? This was new. Atticus had never processed his father's death with anger, at least not anger centered directly at Mr. Further himself. Is that what a good father does? Goes on a fathering sabbatical every other week? Man alive, Atticus had to play father to scout more than half the time, even when Dad was alive. He was always MIA. It'd be one thing if Mom were alive, but she wasn't. God had already taken her. Scout needed Daddy around. And truthfully, Atticus did too. He needed his father. Truth was, Atticus was as much orphan as Scout. He should have gone to Onmo. Fourth Bull. Now Atticus turned the anger back inward. Here he's blaming his dad. Everyone who ever met Joseph Further knew, almost from the instant, instinctually even, that Joe Further was a great man. As a father, he did the best he could, and that was way more than most kids' parents. Atticus was lucky to have him as a father. There was no reason to act like a gunslinger, to act like one of those antisocial cowboys who replaced masculinity with machismo because they never had a father figure to show them the ropes. The right path. Atticus knew the right path. He'd just been in revolt. It's not just sin that sticks to us, not just our mistakes. It's the pain of the world. Fifth Bull. It's the injustice of the world. That's what Atticus hadn't been able to handle. His dad, his mom, Scout, Betty, even Jen. They were all good people. And look what happened to them. They were tried and convicted of crimes they never committed. They suffered. And for what? For no good reason. The world is broken. Believe it and weep. The world is broken. Who broke it? Sixth and last Bull. Tears streamed down Atticus's face. Who broke the world? Why was it this way? Why couldn't things be made right? Why couldn't good people live happy little lives? Why did bad people, smugly in their stupid glass house, why did they prosper? Where's the lonely plague for the sly fox? Where's the nuclear bomb on his head? Why doesn't he get to know that the wicked live short lives? At that moment, a realization swept over Atticus. Chills ran through his bones. He knew now why he joined Smugly, knew why he let Scout go to Onmo. He'd watched his dad, the greatest role model in his life, die a miserable death. If the good suffer and the wicked prosper, then it's better to be in the company of evil than good. Atticus wanted Scout to live a long life, so she shouldn't be near him. Same with Betty. And lastly, himself. He had to rid himself of his goodness in order to live. He had to join some weird cult like the Free Church in order to escape injustice. The last bowl was clean, the shoebox almost overflowing. Atticus wiped away his tears. What next? I'll put this away, and when you can walk, when we're not 20,000 leagues under the sea, you'll throw this box away. Okay. Jen grabbed the shoebox and began to walk out the little bedroom. Jen, Atticus called out. Jen stopped and turned. Yeah? Thank you. Marshall's Inquisition was not all that different than the Spanish one 500 years ago. He took any kid who even had a passing alliance with a gang and threatened them to an inch of their life. In order to pull this off, he had to shrug off any semblance of pretending to perform his normal dolt tasks. He was a full-on, all-day, all-night interrogator and investigator now. One sad side effect of this purge of child gangs and militia is that Marshall couldn't have Rune following him. He didn't want her to see what he was doing. He wanted her to look up to him. Didn't want her to know what he had to do to intimidate the children. We'll not talk here about his techniques. Just know, they were thorough. There was not going to be any device smashings this week at Onmo. Marshall Winston was sure of it. He would murder, absolutely murder, whoever committed that crime. This was no lie. He wasn't above that. You couldn't doubt yourself in a place like this. Yes, sometimes you had to be brutal, but sometimes brutality is the only way to stop evil in its tracks. The Druidry had taught him this much. Marshall pictured himself like some kind of reincarnation of Batman. The Dark Knight. In this case, the uncaped crusader. Problem was, if you were to catch Marshall during one of his little investigations. It wouldn't look exactly like a vigilante fighting the good fight against the mafia or the grim underbelly of a black market. No. It looked like a man hustling children. Maybe that's all it was. When Saturday, lottery day, came, Rune Abdo's name was read. Somehow, she had redlined once again. Someone, despite all of Marshall's campaigns, still had the audacity to break her device. Marshall was beside himself with rage. When the blue-numbered kid was announced, the one that would vote on a reprieve or not for Rune, Marshall was bound and determined to beat the punk up to an inch of his life. He'd pluck the eyeballs out of the criminal's sockets if he had to. But the blue couldn't be found. The hours that separated the initial number assignment and the final call for the condemned swept by, and Marshall was thoroughly unable to find his fiend. Where was the kid hiding? He didn't know. It was as if he was being protected. You know what happens next. The blue doesn't save Rune Abdo, doesn't call her name. Before Marshall even knows what's happening, Rune is placed on a train, out of Anmo, condemned. From a high precipice overlooking the auditorium, Constable catches Marshall's gaze. The constable smiles and waves one finger back and forth. Marshall was found out. His love of Rune had condemned her. And now he had Anmo's dictator to suffer. Hey, this is Dante Stack. All the music and sound effects used in this episode of Solve the World and every other episode of Solve the World can be found under Creative Commons licenses and are appropriately attributed on my website at dantestack.com on our show notes page. Guys, I need 6 volunteers. 6 volunteers. 6 volunteers. Are you one of the 6? Hopefully. If you're unsure, if you're one of the volunteers, just make yourself. Say yes, yes, I will be one of these 6 volunteers. Here's what I need. One of the Solve the World fans created a Solve the World wiki page. You can find that at solvetheworld, all written like one word, .wikia.com. So this is an open source, kind of like Wikipedia page, where anyone is free to edit and add pages. So it's kind of meant to be like an encyclopedia or a dictionary, or just an open source outlet to get Solve the World information. But in order for it to work and to thrive, we need people to be adding to it. So here's what I need. I need 6 volunteers to create 6 pages. So volunteer number 1, I need you to go on the Solve the World Wikia page. Write a Marshall Winston profile. So you go there and write down everything you can remember about Marshall Winston so that other people can add to it, respond to it, and remember, you know, if you're listening and they can't quite place Marshall Winston, or if they're forgetting what's the difference between Marshall and Miles, they've got this page where you have it all neatly laid out. Every interaction Marshall's made, to the best of your ability, you write that down. That's volunteer number 1. Volunteer number 2, same thing but with Atticus Further. That should be pretty easy. He's only shown up, actually, in a few episodes. Number 3, Piper. Again, pretty easy. He doesn't actually show up on the scene till episode 51, though there might be a few things you want to write about him in part 1 and part 2. Volunteer number 4, Leviathan. Someone's got to write a Leviathan page on this Wikia. Although Leviathan hasn't really shown up, Leviathan's a big theme. Got to write that page. Volunteer number 5, give us Miles Faw. Give us the lowdown on Faw. And finally, volunteer number 6, give us Lilith Babbitt. All right, that's what I need this week. If you do that, shoot me an email. I'll get you into Solve the World Society. And maybe we'll think up some other perk to do for you. To be one of the few, the proud, the 6 volunteers. All right, see you next week, guys.